Creative wrap-up. Joanne will take your calls. This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Street Roots for those who cannot afford free speech. Street Roots creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper published weekly in Portland and other media that are catalysts for individual social change. Online at streetroots.org.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Thursday, July 20th at 5 p.m.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month, we'll screen the film tomorrow on Thursday, July 13th at 7 p.m. The documentary Tomorrow sets out to showcase alternative and creative ways of viewing agriculture, economics, energy, and education. It offers constructive solutions to act on a local level to make a difference on a global level. Instead of showing all the worst that can happen, this documentary focuses on the people suggesting solutions and their actions. Again, that's a film screening of the documentary Tomorrow, Thursday, July 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I am Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Well, this last legislative session came to a quiet ending just last week. And as always, when the legislature meets, there are winners and losers. And so I'm gonna ask you to call in and tell me what wins you achieved this legislative session, and what is the business left undone. I am just thrilled that there have been some remarkable legislative wins this past legislative session, some that I didn't think were even humanly possible, but it did make it through this legislative body. And so the first ones of the bills that I'd like to talk about, first, I just want to say that for a long, long time, this legislative session, it didn't look like a lot was going to happen, especially without decisions being made on the transportation bill. And so I will set that bill aside for a moment because there's a lot to like and not like about that particular bill. And I'm sure we will be hearing more about what was left undone by this last legislative session. And so some of the good news, I think some of the good news is that the legislature did pass a budget that was a balanced budget. That is their legislative duty. That is their requirement. And they did do that. So that was a good outcome. In addition, Governor Kate Brown did say that a transportation bill was one of her legislative take-home activities, and the legislature at the very last moment did in fact pull out a transportation bill. There's a lot of controversy surrounding some of the budget maneuvering that took place. In fact, there will be a special election in late January on Senate Bill 229, which was a bill that taxed healthcare providers to expand access to healthcare for Oregonians. And in fact, the Senate Bill 229 would require the state to hold a special election on January 23rd if a $550 million healthcare tax increase is referred to the voters. Now, there are Republican legislators that are a tad upset with this tax on the healthcare industry. And I understand that there is, in fact, an effort to collect signatures, and they have to collect about 60,000 signatures in order to force this to a ballot vote. I think the legislature was pretty creative in actually passing Senate Bill 229 because it would make sure that that this big $550 million hole in the state budget would be addressed at the earliest date possible. And so I do think that that they were very smart in making that happen. And so what is this tax? It is a 1.5% tax on insurance premiums that would then cover people who are on the Oregon Health Plan and expand it to ensure that all kids are covered, and which is pretty phenomenal. And not only all kids, but there is not a litmus test of whether or not someone has documentation or not. And I absolutely 110% agree that a healthcare system should cover everyone and should not be trying to figure out whether or not somebody is a documented resident or not. So I think that was a pretty good outcome for that particular bill. And other really excellent outcomes, and actually I want to go back to that particular bill, especially around healthcare, because the enormous effort that it took, three legislative sessions to get a bill passed that actually would say the word abortion and would make sure that healthcare providers knew that abortion is legal in Oregon and that it is accessible to anyone who needs it. I gotta tell you, I remember just three short years ago having this conversation with legislators and having legislators say, oh, I'm with you, but you have to take the word abortion out because we're never going to be able to pass a bill that has that word in it. And remember, now we live in Oregon, which supposedly has a progressive legislative body, and these were supposedly pro-choice legislators who were giving us this advice. And I am so proud of the Health Equity Coalition standing firm and saying no, because we have been around long enough to know that if the word abortion isn't in a bill that protects women's health, then it's not part of the bill that is passed. And there's no way to say it without saying the word abortion. And so what a difference 3 years makes. What a difference organized, consistent advocacy with legislators, leaders made. That bill this session had about 30 co-sponsors. And so it had a much better, it passed, and it passed because of the work that was done over these last 3 years. I mean, it's insane to think that in a pro-choice state, it would take 3 years to pass a bill with the word abortion in it, but it did. But the good news is that we didn't give up hope, and people continue to do the work because we knew that this was something that had to happen. And so I am thrilled with the result of that particular legislative activity. And so it was the Oregon Health Equity Alliance that had been working on this bill for the last 3 years. And again, I am very grateful that legislative leadership got a clue and actually passed it this legislative session. I'm amazed because, of course, when we went into the session this year, the first thing everybody said was, oh, there's no money, so don't ask for anything that costs money, right? We don't have any money. We've got a $3 billion hole in the budget. And so don't come in asking for anything that requires us to expend money. That didn't stop advocates from going in and demanding that the legislature do their job and actually fund the things that that the community wants them to fund. And so in addition to that, one of the bills that I am just giddy that actually passed was the court reporting bill. I have mentioned on this program in the past that the Oregon was one of two states that did not record grand jury testimony. And what would happen is in the grand jury room, someone would be designated note taker, and they would take handwritten notes and stick them in a file. And so when someone needed to go back and review what was said and what decisions took place in the grand jury process, many times they couldn't read the notes that were in the file and didn't know what the references related to in the notes. And so for 29 years, the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association had gone to every legislative session asking to mandate that there would be a recording of grand jury testimony. For 28 years, it did not pass. And it didn't pass because the District Attorneys Association has been staunch opponents to this measure. And you have to ask yourself, why would they be opposed to recording grand jury testimony? And from all the DAs that I've talked to, they think that they don't need any oversight over the work they do. That's A. And B, they think that as long as they are happy with the grand jury results, we, the public, should be happy also. That is not accountability, and that does not give the public the opportunity to question what happens in the grand jury process. And so throughout this whole legislative session, we kept being told the bill is moving, the bill's not moving, the bill's moving, the bill's not moving. And finally, the bill was passed. And now the responsibility is on the district attorney's office to ensure that those proceedings are recorded, which means that defendants can now have their lawyer get access to grand jury testimony if there are in cases where police are routinely found not guilty. There can now be a request to find out really what was presented in the grand jury and how is it that somebody running away was a threat to the police officer and it was okay for you to shoot them in the back. I think we will have an opportunity to have much more transparency because this bill finally passed. It is not okay for any one elected official to actually not provide information and do their job in a transparent way. And so I am thrilled that we have a new accountability tool in place. But the fact that it took 29 years to pass this bill should be appalling to Oregonians that all this time, we just had to take the DA's word that the grand jury process was impartial and fair and accessible to everyone. And we know that's not true because we know there's no way that people with facts would be acquitting police officers. I mean, well, not even not refusing to charge police officers for some of the egregious behavior that we have seen in this community around the state. And so maybe good things will come because we now have that bill. Another bill that passed this legislative session is called the profiling bill. And you might remember that I have also talked about this bill in the past. It came out of the Attorney General's Task Force that was co-chaired by the Attorney General, Ellen Rosenbaum, and Casey Jama, Executive Director of Unite Oregon. And the bill had two parts. And one part I wasn't that excited about, but the second part I was giddy about. So part one requires statewide that data is collected on who police stop. And the data has to include ethnicity, age, gender, etc. Because even though we've had the law in the book since early 1990s, it was a voluntary effort for law enforcement to collect that data. Now, Portland's been collecting data forever. Unfortunately, Portland Police just doesn't do anything with the data that they collect. So ever since the early 2000s, Portland Police have been routinely releasing data on traffic stops and pedestrian stops. A few years back, we made them start releasing data on gang enforcement units and other specialty stops. And the data has not moved at all in the entire time that this law has been in place. We still know in Portland that African Americans are stopped at a rate that is three times their representation in the community. We know that they are searched twice as often as white folks are searched. We also know that they are half as likely to have guns, drugs, and other paraphernalia after they're stopped, questioned, and searched. We also know, based on the reports that came out earlier this year in the Portland Tribune, that the criminal justice system, every step of the way, from the police officer on the street to the judge on the bench, penalize blackness at a severe rate every step of the way. So whether it's the judge on the bench, who is supposedly impartial, whether it's the DA, who's supposedly impartial with their sentencing decisions, with their charging decisions, we know, and it's no new data. It's not new data at all. And so the second part of the bill, which I'm really thrilled about, is the part that took drug possession crimes and dropped their severity from being a felony conviction to being a misdemeanor conviction. Why am I giddy about this? Back to my last point, because we know who is charged and we know who is convicted at a much higher rate than would be appropriate for drug crimes. And so moving those crimes from a felony, which means that people no longer have the opportunity to move forward with their life because, you know, employment is hard, housing is hard, there is no assistance for anything, so no assistance for education. Having those individuals be able to be prosecuted as a misdemeanor means that their life isn't over because of one stupid act on their part. If you'd like to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. Did you have legislative winners and losers? If you did, give me a call and let me know what you are most excited about and what just made you crazy. In addition to that, I want to talk about I want to talk about the fact that this I'm so thrilled that the court reporting bill passed. I'm thrilled that we have the racial profiling bill passed. There are other bills that I think were equally just very, very impressive that we actually got through this legislative session in a way that actually did some good for the people who live here in Oregon. So who were the losers? Renters were the losers. For some reason, in a progressive legislative body, we were unable to remove the prohibition against a rent control process. And it is amazing to me, even though this was a take-home bill for Oregon House for Tina Kotek, the Oregon the leader of the Oregon House, and it didn't happen. And so it amazes me, as someone who used to be a legislator, at just how much control lobbyists have. The Home Builders Association specifically has in the Oregon legislature, because it is the home builders who did the preemption long before housing costs were out of control here in Oregon, long before there was a need to start thinking about how do you, in fact, control this rapidly rising rent. The home builders did that even before I was a legislator, and I was in a legislator back in 97. 95. The fact that the Democratic majorities in both houses were not able to pull that off is a pretty frustrating thing. I'm going to go to the phone line.
Okay.
Ted? Good morning, Ted. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Joanne, this is just really fascinating. I'm so glad you've brought in some talk about the legislature, which seems kind of missing. And anyway, thank you. It's a great
You're
show.
Welcome.
I just have a technical question about the court recording of the grand jury.
Right.
Are you talking about like an audio recording, or is this the court recorder who sits down with a little machine and makes an official transcription?
Yeah, no, so it will not be an official transcription, but it will be a audio recording. So somebody will be charged with turning on a recorder and actually recording the entire process. Now, what I don't know is whether or not that means that it will also be written out and put in another format. I don't know those details yet and all that. Normally after a bill passed, the devil's in the details, right? How do you implement it? But the fact that it's going to be recorded is huge, right? If it needs to be transcribed, I think that process would be available. But the only thing I know for sure is that the recording happens.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome.
Bye.
My pleasure. Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Maxine. Welcome to KBOO.
Thanks a lot. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi. First of all, before I start on the bill that I'm happy about, I just want to really lift up the work around health care, you know, coverage for all.
Yes.
And also the profiling bill. I think it's really, really important. These are such great victories and really important. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Hard work by all. Thank you. So the bills I wanted to comment about were two bills that never got out of the Rules Committee, which is great, or actually three bills, and they all involve really suppression of free speech around the conflict in Israel-Palestine. And so there was a bill to condemn a United Nations resolution. The resolution is 2334, which is a resolution that calls on justice for Palestinians, and it was a really important resolution that the United States decided not to block, and therefore it passed, which was great. And so it's a really important step in justice for Palestinians, and the legislature was going to try to oppose that, but that bill never got a hearing, which was great. And then a bill to oppose the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions Movement, or the BDS movement, to call that out as a as an unjust movement, as something that doesn't forward the peace process. And it is a movement that's guaranteed free speech, the BDS movement is, and it's a nonviolent means for Palestinians to use economic leverage to try to get their human rights met. And so it's great that neither of those bills even got out of the committee.
Right.
And a victory for the BDS movement, for sure.
Yes. Thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing, Maxine.
Yeah, thanks, Joanne.
Okay. Have a great day. Thank you. So I think one of the other big winners was workers. Workers who have rotating shifts. Many times workers who are like that work different shifts. Like some companies have three shifts, and if you're a worker, you don't know from one day to the next whether or not you're going to be working the midnight to eight shift, or whether or not you're going to be called in to work like back-to-back shifts. And so a new law was passed that requires, and it's the first in the nation, by the way, so Oregon can still do like first. There's a requirement that workers have at least 2 weeks in advance their schedule so that they have the ability to plan their life based on their work schedule, so they can get childcare and they can do other things in a way that is intentional rather than last minute. And so I think a big hands up. Thank you to the legislative body for being able to pull that off. Another bill that I'm excited about is lawmakers passed a bill that mandated women receive pay equal to men. Again, it was one of those bills that I'm absolutely shocked made it through the legislative session. Most people know that for every dollar that men make, women make, depending on the woman, let me be clear, women make like about 65 cents to every dollar that a man makes. But it depends on the ethnicity, because if you are a Latino woman, that it goes down to about 60 cents for every dollar. I believe if you're so there are different rates based on ethnicity. I thought it was actually illegal to pay people based on ethnicity, but apparently employers have figured out a way to do that, and it has become just the norm. But the fabulous thing about this bill is that what it means is that there will be a requirement, and the Bureau of Labor and Industry will be the oversight process that you can file a complaint if, in fact, you find out that this law is not being adhered to. And so I do think that is an excellent win for women in Oregon. In fact, the last census data shows that for every dollar that an Oregonian man makes, Hispanic women in Oregon make just 53 cents. Native American women earn 69 cents, Black women earn 77 cents, and Asian women earn 79 cents, while white women earn 83 cents. And so I will be very interested to see how the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industry addresses this systemic inequity. But it is now the law of the land. It is another first in the country, a bill being passed to ensure that women and men are paid equally. But as you can tell, there is a lot of work to do when it comes to women of color. And I hope that there is a vigorous activity that makes that realized. And so it is the Equal Pay Act of 2017. Let's hope that it's not just a bill that gathers dust, but that there's some real activity to make that, to realize that process. Again, I talked about Medicare coverage, cover all kids. And I want to just shout out to Apano, who has fearlessly been at the forefront of this fight. Yes, there was a coalition, but I know that there are some absolutely fabulous leaders at Apano that worked their heart out. I know that they collected like 10,000 postcards that they sent to legislators. So they were all over this to make sure that that bill passed. We have another caller on the line.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. How are you today?
Excellent. Thank you for doing this show. You always have excellent shows.
Well, thank
definitely
you.
Definitely way up on this list, so thank you. Winners and losers for me. I'm part of the cannabis thing in Oregon for 19 years. I've been part of the medical program.
Right.
for the last year, they've cut the medical program out of the recreational dispensaries. So they just made a Band-Aid fix that we're allowed to go back again if we have more than 12 plants. That was kind of a winner.
Right.
A big loser was social consumption. A few years ago, the Clean Air Act arbitrarily pushed cannabis into the Clean Air Act, even though there's no science showing that there's secondhand smoke with cannabis or anything about cannabis. They put it in there, and we tried to push a bill so that some of our social clubs could be legal,
right.
And that lost, which was sad. The other sad one for cannabis is workers' rights. We tried pushing a bill for cannabis to be allowed for workers, and that failed also. Mm. So we definitely have a short month in February to push through, and hoping something happens with some of those bills in February. But I'll get off there and listen to the rest of your show.
Wonderful. Well, and I one of the things that I know is that it's interesting with the cannabis legislation, because if you have a home, you can smoke cannabis in your home.
Right.
If you are houseless, then you would be illegally smoking a legal substance if you were doing it on the street.
Exactly.
Right? Which is, again, a way to create haves and have-nots, right?
Yep, totally.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that we certainly need to make sure that that these new rules actually bend over backwards to make sure that people who have suffered harm by public policy around cannabis actually are not being further harmed by how the new law is being implemented.
Exactly.
So appreciate
I'll get out there. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate your work. Thank you. Have a good day. And so who were the losers in this legislative session? I already talked about big losers are renters, housing advocates who thought it was a no-brainer to get the legislative body to remove the preemption against local communities implementing rent control measures. That didn't pass. If I were you, I would ask my Oregon House and Oregon Senate members, as they roll out all these town hall meetings all over the state, why they fail to protect renters, when I would say that renters are the larger voting population rather than homeowners, since there's many more renters than there are people who own homes. Why they did that and why they deserve your vote. The next time they're up for election, if they can't do something as simple as give local communities the authority to implement rent control as they see fit. And so I think our housing problem is only going to get worse, and we are really only coming up with Band-Aid solutions so far. And I would love to see some real leadership around fixing what's broken in that particular system. Some may say that hospitals are losers because of the tax that is being imposed on hospitals and on healthcare, on the healthcare industry, to actually preserve and expand Medicaid. I would say that they're not losers, because ever since the Healthcare Act was mandated, healthcare industry has made a small fortune, and their ability to serve all those new clients is really not that good. So they are getting paid lots of money every month to provide services, and if you're not a strong advocate, it still takes you quite a while to get an appointment, to get in with your primary care physician, and everything costs money. So even walking in the door, they want a $50 copay. I think that we do have to look at how do we make sure that healthcare that having a health card equates to health care, because in many people's case, we're paying money for services that we're not getting. So I am grateful that the healthcare industry, who has seen windfalls since people have been mandated to buy their coverage, they should be just fine. And so if you see healthcare industries fighting this tax, then I think you might want to take your money to another healthcare provider when it's time for renewal, because I think that's a very important thing to see. Are they going to be part of the solution, or are they just about enriching themselves? Let's see, there was another bill that I wanted to talk about, but I also really want to hear whether or not you are satisfied with this legislative session. Apparently, there was originally a goal to have a special session, but now I don't believe that a special session is scheduled. I believe that legislators think they've done their job, and now they'll be waiting to find out if, in fact, they'll have to defend this tax that they passed. If that tax is sent to the voters and repealed, then that means that we're talking $550 million that would be cut, or the legislature would have to come up with some other plan in order to replace that $550 million. I believe that there is a legislative proposal to put a couple of funding bills on a November 2018 ballot, but we're a long way away from that, so we'll have to wait and see whether or not legislators, in fact, will do that. And so I think, you know, it was not a bad session. I'm always pretty disappointed that we can't do more. I'm normally disappointed that what we do are very incremental steps. But I also want to say that there were some legislative champions this session. And I also want to mention that the freshman class of the Oregon legislative body was the most diverse legislative class, I believe, in the history of Oregon's legislature. And I just want to hold that up and appreciate the fact that we now have a legislative body that is starting to look a little bit like the state of Oregon. We're nowhere near actually having achieved that goal, but we're a lot closer now than we have ever been in my time here in Oregon. We need more. We need more working people to really step up and run for these positions, because what we know is that without strong support from the community, these gains will trickle away again, because no one is responsible, quite frankly, for recruiting, mentoring, and supporting people of color who run and serve in public office. It just doesn't seem to be on anybody's agenda, and that's a problem. But I think last year, I think after the, I think people just decided that, you know, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to jump in and I'm going to do it. And some days that's exactly what needs to happen, because if you wait for permission, especially women and especially women of color, you will never ever get permission. People will always tell you you're not ready. People will always tell you, you know, it's not your turn. And so I am thrilled that people ignored the critics and ran and were successful. And so it's my hope that the next legislative session will see more gains by people of color throughout the state, and that there will be a intentional effort to make the legislative body reflect the people who live and work and worship in the city of Portland. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Will. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Yeah. You do know this is Will Bennett, right?
Well, I know now because I hear your voice. How you doing, Will Bennett?
I thought you asked for my first. I said, tell him it's Will Bennett.
Ah.
Okay. Anyway, I live in a REACH building.
Yes.
Affordable housing.
Yes.
And Gilman Court is a brand new building. It's named after the founder of REACH.
Right.
And so I became a volunteer for REACH.
Right.
And I'm a volunteer, and I'm an advocate for affordable housing.
Right.
We went to Salem the other month, and we talked to senators, and we talked to even the president. And I, you know, we Frederick Lew wasn't on the agenda, but I went and said hi to him, and we saw winners, and it was a nice trip.
Wonderful.
So I don't know what the outcome of the, what happened with the affordable housing.
Yeah, actually, it didn't pass. So what we were trying to do is remove the exemption so that we could get so that we could actually enact rent control. It did not pass.
And that was what I was advocating for?
Yes.
Because I don't go into the details all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to, right? Because when you go do a legislative visit, everybody's got their part, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, that's about all I wanted to say. You enjoy your day, okay?
Well, thank you. And thank you for... Wait. I just want to thank you for actually showing up at the legislative body and making your voice heard. That is so key because,
I was advocating for affordable housing and... tiny homes and micro communities.
Nice.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate
it was,
you.
It was fun. I was telling you, I'm trying to get more engaged in the community.
Yes. Still haven't seen you at an NAACP meeting, but we'll fix that.
Yeah, I'm going to need you. Yeah. I sent you an email. Gmail. You got to read it.
All right. Okay. I did. Actually, I did. That's what I thought you were calling about. Okay, we'll talk soon.
You read it?
Yep.
We'll talk about that later, right?
All right. Have a good day. Bye. Thank you for your call.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to leave the legislative body for just a couple of moments because I want to make sure that I want to talk about Portland Police for just a sec. Right now, until I believe the 15th, the community has an opportunity to weigh in on the... changes to the policy of use of force for Portland police officers. You might remember that the agreement with the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division required that Portland Police Bureau, when they were changing directives, which basically are their policies, that they had to publicize it and allow the community to have input. And so I need to back up for a little bit and remind you that under the last police commissioner and mayor, Charlie Hales, he and his premature negotiation of the police union contract patted himself on the back for the removal of the 48-hour rule, which was a rule that we, the community, had been trying to get out of the police contract for well over a decade. And the 48-hour rule allowed for police officers, because they were so traumatized after using force against a community member, to take 48 hours to calm themselves down before they were required to write a written report of the incident. Now, if you and I had an incident, we didn't get 48 hours to calm ourselves down before we'd be required to say what happened. But the mayor, Charlie Hales, patted himself on the back. I did away with the 48-hour rule. Yeah, I was a wonderful person. So now under Chief Mike Marshman, we see that the proposed directive change, and the directive is number 1010.10, which is the use of force directive, would now be changed to say that police officers would not have to write a written report until after the district attorney's criminal investigation has ended. Now, think about that. You are a public servant police officer who has shot and killed a community member. Mike Marshman, our current chief, would like police officers to never have to put on paper what transpired until after the DA has done their rubber stamp of finding them not guilty, not charging them and saying that what they did was within policy. And so what Mike Marshman is trying to do is change the policy so that you and I cannot review what this police officer has said happened before he goes into the grand jury process. Now, why would Chief Marshman think that this was a good idea? I am absolutely appalled that Chief Marshman, before he was promoted to Chief Marshman was actually the police officer responsible for the implementation of the settlement agreement. He was the inspector general working for the police bureau, and his sole role was to make sure that we were implementing the settlement agreement. I see this as a sneaky, underhanded way to undermine the spirit and the wording of the settlement agreement that the Portland Police Bureau is required by the Department of Justice to implement. Now, it's not that they've done much anyway, other than spend millions of dollars, but the fact that he, on the day before the long 4th of July weekend, posted this at 5:15 p.m. and the public had 12 days to comment is pretty appalling to me, because once again, the police bureau is trying to slip in the policy practices that the community has rejected over and over and over again. So now, rather than 48 hours, how long does the grand jury process take? Sometimes a month, sometimes 2 months. So rather than 48 hours, we are authorized. Well, we would. I'm not. I don't support this at all. But Chief Marshman would like to authorize police to never have to write anything until after they have completed the grand jury process. Isn't that the most ludicrous thing that you have ever heard? And if it is, I would encourage you to call the mayor at 503-823 4120 and tell him that this is like totally unacceptable, totally in opposition to the spirit and the wording of the settlement agreement, and this does absolutely nothing to create public trust in police officers, nor does it do anything to create public trust in the so-called investigative process of police officers' misconduct. This is absolutely headed in the wrong direction, and I'm appalled that Mike Marshman actually thought that we, the public, wouldn't read all the fine print and know that he is actually making accountability more elusive than it has ever been. The 48-hour rule sucked. And this rule is a word that I can't actually say on public radio, but you can fill in the blanks for yourself. I encourage you, the mayor needs to hear from you. You need to call him, you need to email him, you need to tweet him, you need to text him, you need to Facebook him, but the mayor needs to know that this is absolutely unacceptable, and that I am so glad that we are doing this national search for a police chief, because clearly this is not the man who is going to reform Portland Police Bureau. And so I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. I'm headed back to the phone lines. Good morning, Gary. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, my dear. Great soapbox, by the way.
Thank you.
You know what? You know what? I've given up on this mayor. I've called him many, many times about the homeless invading, you know, businesses and destroying business property. He doesn't want to do anything about it. So that's my soapbox. He doesn't want to do anything. But you said something very interesting about police killing community members. Police don't kill community members. Police get rid of the police. Got to get rid of the threat.
But so wait, aren't they? Wait,
officer,
wait. Can we talk?
Your police officer.
Can we talk?
Know that.
Can we talk?
Yeah, you bet.
I have been following police for over 20 years in this community. I have been involved in every investigation of police shootings of unarmed community members. There is never a justification for shooting someone in the back who is running away. If you are a professionally trained law enforcement person, you have many more tools at your disposal than to shoot and kill someone running away who is no threat to you or anyone else at the moment.
Until you're a police officer and you're in their shoes, you don't know what they go through. My uncle's a police
officer.
Oh,
please, please.
I've ridden with him. I've ridden with him.
As have I. I've ridden with police officers.
It's easy to armchair quarterback from afar. They do a great job.
I totally disagree that we should, like, ignore when police officers shoot people in the back, they are not under threat 24/7 like they would like you to believe. I've already had this program about how police officers is not the most dangerous job on the planet. In fact, they are so well armed that it's probably one of the safest jobs on the planet. I think as a community, it is unacceptable for police officers to shoot and kill people when they have, when they are supposedly well trained and they have other tools available to them. In fact, I saw in Portland, this man would have been dead, but I saw a video from a police force that actually values all life. And it was Newark, New Jersey. I saw a big man who was clearly in mental health stress with a big knife walking down the street threatening people. I saw 10 police officers walking with him, talking very calmly, encouraging him to put the knife down. Out of those 10 police officers, only one of those officers had their weapon drawn to ensure the safety of the other officers. All the other officers were just merely walking around him, giving him a wide berth so he didn't have an opportunity to stab anyone. And ultimately, they disarmed that man and took him to jail. Are you going to tell me that's not a more humane way of policing? That if a police officer feels threatened, they should just take out their guns and shoot people? You may have friends who are police officers. I have friends who are police officers too. And most of my friends who are police officers have never shot and killed anybody because they use their words, they use their authority, and they use other tools other than just taking out their gun and shooting people. That is not acceptable at all. If you value human life, you should value them all, not just police officers. So I am done with you. Thank you for your call. Okay, what else we got? Oh, we got about 10 minutes left. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Naboo. At 9 is Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoint with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers, David Nyman welcomes Yuru Herrera in his novel Kingdom Cons, a powerful reflection on the relationship between art and violence. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures with a look at virtual reality and 3D comics. Hear how the immersive technology is transforming the world of animation and comics. We want to thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you haven't become a member yet, don't despair. Just go to kboo.fm and click on donate, and it is that easy. I also want to let you know that on Friday and Saturday of this week, the NAACP Portland branch is hosting Freedom Summer 2017. We'll be hosting this event at Warner Pacific College, and on Friday evening from 7 to 8:30, there will be a diverse faith panel discussing how the teachings of Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King, direct action through nonviolent protests, influences their messaging to their congregation and their work in the broader community. So that will be Friday evening from 7 to 8:30. The doors will open at 6. On Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. will be a series of workshops to help community members collect the tools that they need for bystander intervention, know your rights, de-escalation training. We have hip-hop and direct action. We have a series of workshops to give community members tools to help them prepare themselves for whatever is taking place in our community. The NAACP felt that we had to do something to start getting people thinking about what would you do if you are in a situation where violence broke out, hate broke out, how would you impact that? And I think that that's a good, I think it will be a wonderfully wonderful panel on Friday evening, and some very informative workshops on Saturday 9 to 1. Again, that's at Warner Pacific College. It starts Friday evening, July 14th, and will be doors will open at 6, program from 7 to 8:30, and then again with workshops on Saturday starting at 9 a.m., and we will be done by 1. We have some wonderful, wonderful panelists for Friday evening, and we have some fabulous workshops for Saturday. And you are invited to participate and tell other folks to participate. And I am excited about it. It's one of those things we just kind of said, you know, we got to like just stop what we're doing and do something. The last caller said that he was actually mad with the mayor because the mayor wasn't doing things about houseless people destroying businesses and property. I would like to see a humane approach that would hire houseless people to provide cleaning, security, and support in those places where people are. If anyone thinks that people are living on the street and under bridges and really unsafe conditions because they want to, they really have not been paying attention. And I appreciate the mayor not taking a aggressive police approach to removing people who have nowhere else to go. And in fact, I think he's been a little heavy-handed because I keep hearing about sweeps happening, and sweeps happen because people like my last caller call the police and call the mayor's office and complain. And so I hear that the mayor responds to those complaints by going out and sweeping those areas. Now, I just want to say to you, how demoralizing when you have so little to have the police come and toss all your belongings, your sleeping bags, your tent, your things that keep you dry and out of the elements. And here we have a caller who thinks that we should do more of that. I would love that caller to be part of the solution and help us figure out how to get a safe, affordable home for everyone. Because that should be a basic human right. No one should be forced to live on the street. And we have many more people. It is so, even though people think it's visible now, it's not. There are so many people living in cars, couch surfing. We have an epidemic, and our solution so far to the state of emergency and housing has been woefully inadequate. I feel for you if you have a business. Why don't you go out and actually hire someone who's on the street to actually work for your business? Maybe then they would have enough money to be able to afford a roof over their head. I haven't met anybody living on the street who actually wants to live on the street. So that's my other soapbox for today. I think, again, overall, the legislative body did a okay job in addressing some longstanding issues in Oregon. I'm disappointed in the fact that I'm not going to say they weren't able to. They didn't have the political courage to remove the exemption against rent control. That only takes political courage. It's not that they couldn't do it. They didn't want to do it. So when they start having these town halls to tell you how hard they worked for you this legislative session, remind them that they are in leadership. It is they who get to make the decisions about what passed and what doesn't pass. And if they don't know how to work across the aisle with their Republican colleagues, maybe I can teach them a course on bipartisan cooperation. Luckily, we are not like Congress, and we are so out of control that we can't talk to people across the aisle. But again, not a bad session. It could have been better. I will see you next week, same time, same place, same station. And I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I hope I see you at our Freedom Summer 2017 event. And I hope that you will be engaged, involved, and active. And I also want to thank my fabulous engineer for always making me sound good. Have a great day. See you next week.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning. It's 8:58 and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. Then at 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. Between the covers at 11, David Naiman welcomes Yuri Herrera and his novel Kingdom Cons, a powerful reflection on the relationship between art and violence. And at 11:30, it's Word and Pictures with a look at virtual reality and 3D comics. Hear how the immersive technology is transforming the world of animation and comics.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.